right, and welcome to another season, a new season of the Streaking the Lawn podcast. Once again, my name is Pierce, and once again, I have with me Caroline. How's it going?
Hey, new season. What up?
Yeah, best season ever.
How was your summer, Pierce?
It was great. I watched a lot of soccer.
Yeah, that was happening. That was a thing that happened.
Mm-hmm. And I went to the beach. So, great all around. How was yours?
That was pretty good.
That's good. Yeah. We've also got from streakingthelawn.com, Paul Wiley. How's it going, Paul?
Hey, hey. Going, doing good.
Excellent. You ready to talk about some fall and winter UVA sports?
Absolutely.
This is all soccer, right?
Yeah, field hockey and volleyball. Let's do it.
All right. No, we're going to run down the World Cup results because Germany lost.
Hey, shut up.
All right. No, we're here to talk about the Hoos, obviously. I think we got a lot to discuss because we haven't talked since March. March sounds about right. And I don't think anything happened.
Nothing happened after March. Nothing. Nope. Sunshine and puppies.
I remember being in Brooklyn and being really happy.
Yeah, Brooklyn was fun. That was cool.
And then I remember the season ending. No, I mean, I think we can jump right into a little bit of basketball. Now that you've had months to digest, and we don't want to spend too much time, but in like 10 words or fewer, how are you feeling when you think back on last season, Paul?
I mean, ACC tournament title.
Okay. Yeah, I get your point. That is the highlight highlights.
Good enough for me. There's another four words. Like that's
all right. I like that. That is impressively concise, Caroline.
unfortunate series of events, but I'm over it. Is that under 10?
Okay. Yeah. No, I got you.
I think it was a perfect storm situation. You couldn't get those same things to happen again if you wanted, as a sports fan. Flat out, like it's a cool thing that people know is going to happen eventually. As a Virginia fan, it's the worst damn thing ever.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, people say what you will about the comments and the need, like, doesn't matter if you lose classy, like, cause you lost, you suck first 16, all that stuff. But honestly, I've seen more stuff that's like, UMBC scored the upset, not Virginia blew it. And there are things that do say that, obviously, they exist, but the majority of things that I've seen recently or over the last few months has been more towards, like, honestly, not a lot of it hasn't mentioned Virginia. As someone who, you know, tweets from the Streaking the Lawn account, it's annoying to have some mouth breather respond with UMBC anytime you tweet anything, whether it's basketball or not. Like, that's annoying, but it's just over a certain point, you're like, all right, yeah, it happened. Can't do anything about it.
I think the short term, UVA is going to be, you know, mentioned with it very frequently.
Yeah.
Probably in the long term, you know, more people say the Villanova championship, you know, things like that. So,
and I think, honestly, the way that they handled it is the best thing possible for Virginia, because if any of the guys, especially returning guys, like Kyle Guy or Ty, or Tony Bennett had been pissants about it or had a hissy fit or something like that, then there's more stories that are, there's more content. Now all you can say is like, oh, let me make fun of you with a screenshot of the score. Like, all right, they got blown out because they had a bad day. But there's no like Grayson Allen tantrum on the bench-esque video clip to continue putting out there. Like, and I think honestly, when people say like, oh, it doesn't matter if they lose classy, like in that sense, it kind of does, because Tony's leaning into the jokes. He's even making the like, oh, this isn't a postseason award type comments, which I mean, it's going to be his legacy until it's not. And I think that more recently it's going to, or sooner than we think it's going to be, I think it'll be fine.
And there are two legitimately awesome things to come out of it. One is that you've got a group of the most talented basketball players to ever play together at Virginia. You know, you've got individuals, but as a unit, this is probably going to be the most talented team that they've fielded at one time. That group of people are now insanely motivated to prove everybody wrong. That is one awesome thing to come out of.
Sure.
The other legitimately awesome thing is the UMBC Athletics Twitter account. Like, those guys are actually freaking hilarious, and they do it mostly in a way that isn't, you know, they're not just jumping in UVA's mentions every other day.
Oh, not at all. If anything,
the tech fans are.
Yeah. They keep people out of our mentions.
Right. Yeah. They're just like, they're doing their own thing that, you know, yeah, we're going to own a piece of history forever. And that's cool. And we really like that. And we're going to have fun with it because we're the quirky little underdogs who did it.
Yeah. I muted them immediately way back when, but
they recently followed
each
me
their own.
And we have, we've had like a little, you know, interaction and stuff, and it's been kind of funny.
They slid up in your DMs?
No DMs, but it's been kind of funny, and I do appreciate, like, I think that their Twitter account has handled it. I mean, again, the only things that I found annoying is just because I'm like, it reminds me of a terrible loss, but
sure.
I think, yeah, Paul hits it exactly. Like, this team is going to use it as motivation, and I don't have any doubt they're going to use it as motivation. That doesn't mean that I'm not a little bit concerned about, like, how do you actually come out that first game when you now have to put all of this, like, frustration and anger that you've held since March on the court? And the biggest thing is going to be going to Maryland, if we're just going to throw that out there. And we can get more in-depth on that when we actually get closer to basketball season. But if the Maryland fans don't wear yellow and black, they're not doing it right. Like, I just don't – I mean, it's technically part of their school system. Yeah. So, I mean – I don't know. I just think that's going to be the toughest thing, is going to that hellhole and playing in front of those fans, because they're just going to get mocked.
Oh, whatever.
Who have neither class nor cleverity. So
I don't think UVA basketball cares where they're playing. You know?
Oh, I don't either. I think they're going to expect to get that from everybody. But as a group that's pretty vocal,
it's going to be annoying for us to watch, for sure. Well, we don't need to spend too much time on basketball because we have a couple months. It's actually just under 2 months away, so we'll be back to review. But you guys have any quick thoughts on the three freshmen maybe who are coming in? Potentially Braxton Key. We're still waiting to see if his waiver is going to be processed. I know there's been some notes about who's going to redshirt that might be impacted by if the transfer Braxton Key plays or not, but by all reports, things are looking pretty good for three guys who weren't breaking down the records for you know, recruiting stars.
Coming in. I'm curious to see what they do with our big man from Argentina, Francisco, just because of he seems the most physically ready of, and he just recently got that 4-star ranking. He just came off playing for the, was it U18, U19 team? And he was on, like, the all-tournament team. Like, he's done really well. There is some depth up there right now, and a lot of times the big men do redshirt. So if you see some of those guys, like, anyway, some of those guys have done that. Not necessarily just because of, some of it because of transferring, like Anthony Gill, but, you know, Jack redshirted, Jay redshirted. But now those guys are available, so I don't know how much he's going to play right away. Cody Statman is out playing with the Australian U18 team, and he's done pretty well. And then, of course, Kihei Clark.
We'll find out.
We'll find out. I think he's going to put in some minutes. Maybe not a ton, but I think he's going to do some.
He sort of has to, unless
mid to late. Yeah.
Yeah, and like, I mean, they've lost Devin, but they also lost Nigel. And that's just, you know, they've got to spell the guards. So that'll be interesting to see for sure. See if Marco has made a step, you know, that could play a role in Keenan's minutes. But
yeah, I think the freshmen tend to play when they can, either the rare freshman who can do everything well enough or can do one thing really, really well and you can cover up their weaknesses. I think that actually opens the door to Kia Clark playing more than the other two, because there's not an easy analog on the roster of somebody else who can do what he does. That for, you know, big man scoring obviously is the question mark with this team, but there should probably be somebody who can go get a bucket down low.
I think we're not sure that
Gaffaro is necessarily going to be the guy to do that. Even if he was called on or expected to do that this year, you know, a knockdown perimeter shooter, the roster is lousy with those, especially, you know, catching off or shooting off the catch. you know, if you need to take Kyle out, you've got other guys that can do that. So, you know, that's kind of the Cody Statman role. Nobody has the jitterbug guard either on the offense side or the defense side like Clark does. And,
yeah,
you can't teach height and being 5'9", 5'10", whatever he is. That is obviously the drawback, but you can coach around that. You can scheme around that and get what he brings to the court, which obviously Tony thinks there's something pretty significant he can bring to the court, given that this guy got an offer like 2 years ago.
Yeah. Well, it should be interesting to see, and hopefully we'll have more reports from practice and such as we get closer to the season. But let's jump into football. I think it's that time of the year where, you know, people are ready for summer, maybe to wind down, ready for football season, ready for hoodie weather, ready for pumpkin spice lattes. Paul, those are your favorite? No, not your favorite.
Good Lord, no.
But
even you girl can't get on board with those. I'm out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're over on the PSLs, but three for three on football to some extent, at least. And UVA it's a weird off season. You know, it's a successful campaign to make it back to a bowl game last year, only to get absolutely embarrassed in it. You know, they did the classic Virginia football, do really well in the middle of the season and then go 1-4, you know, to finish it out in the regular season. And some of that scheduling. And once again, most of the tougher games are at the back end of the schedule this year. Is a bowl game the expectation you would put forth? I mean, we could really dive into a lot of stuff, but I think as fans looking at this continued rebuild, is there room for them to take a step back, you know, losing Benkert to graduation? Is there room to be patient if they don't get to six wins? Or is that the solid must get expectation for you guys?
I think there's six gettable wins on this schedule. You know, it's going to be, actually, I think the back end of the schedule has the potential to be where the sixth win comes from. You know, you look at the middle of that schedule, you've got Louisville, NC State, and Miami back-to-back-to-back weeks, including a road trip to Raleigh. I mean, that's rough. You know, that NC State team, yeah, they lost a bunch of guys to the pros, but they got a bunch of really good guys coming in. Dave Doran has done an incredible job recruiting at that program. And, of course, Miami is going to be, you know, probably a top 10 team, if not top five, for most of the year. So that's, I think I hope fans don't get disheartened if, you know, after a road trip to Indiana and then playing a really good Ohio team, you know, Ohio team that won, I think, 9 games last year. If all of a sudden the only win for the first 6 games was over Richmond, all hope is not lost. Like you've got Duke, who were 2-0 against under Mendenhall, North Carolina, who I think is going to be sneaky awful this year, that you've got the suspensions, that team has the mental fortitude of a wet napkin. Their coach is a crazy person. That team is going to fall apart by end of October, even once they get their guys back. Pitt's tough. Liberty is in their first season as FBS, so I guess that means they'll probably beat us. But then it's but then it's Georgia Tech, who, you know, Mendenhall has played that option offense really well. And then of course there's the end of the year game against Virginia Tech. So I think the back end of the schedule, the end of October, early November games are the ones that could be what put them over the edge. And I think that is very doable. I'm not sure whether it's safe to say that should be the goal or the expectation. I think saying that should be the goal, I can get on board with. Saying that should be the expectation, maybe a 1 year sort of ahead of schedule.
All right.
I agree with most of that. I think that it should be a goal, and I think it is a goal. But if they win 5 games or 4 games and we're close and 2 more type thing, that's not, I don't think fans should consider that a backslide. I think that they were a little bit ahead of where a lot of us anticipated. No one saw them going out to Boise State and just destroying. They, I do think that in that stretch that Paul mentioned, that's extraordinarily tough. For some reason, I just feel like they're going to steal one of those. And I don't know if it's because they've played, you know, 2 years ago. And some of that was, you know, I guess that was the last year under, anyway, whatever. They've had close games against Louisville. Louisville is finally without Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure they have, you know, they have other good players coming in, but just knowing that the Cavalier killer is no longer there, that's nice. And then we've played Miami. I mean, that game at Miami last year was, you know, you can't burn out after three quarters or whatever, but they had the Miami fans scared.
Sure, like, they played.
Virginia played really, yeah, really well in that game, mm-hmm, and unfortunately couldn't hold on long enough against a better team. Like, that just is how it is. So, mm-hmm, and agreed about State, Ryan Finley, their quarterback, is outstanding. But I think we have the potential to have one of the best defensive back units in the ACC, if not at least competing, mm-hmm, to be good in the country. I do think that they're a little underrated when it comes to like the voting and the ACC Digital Network countdowns about the best defensive backs and all that sort of stuff. It's one of the positions that I feel the most confident in.
Sure.
With this team.
Easily.
So when you're going against a good throwing quarterback, like, that's something that should give some confidence. And they lost their entire starting defensive line to the draft. Like, mm-hmm, that's also something that if we have a younger, maybe not younger offensive line, but the lines are one of the things that Coach Mendenhall has talked about needing to improve just across the board.
Of course.
Going against a team that lost all of their starters from the year before is a nice place to start. Not start the season, but in a game.
So here's my question. Here's my question for the schedule. Sure. We're talking about whether a bowl game should be the expectation or the goal. Let's say a bowl game is a foregone conclusion that it's not going to happen.
Sure.
That it's 5-7 or 4-8, but one of those wins is over Tech. That's what you get to choose. You get to choose the 4 or 5 wins, one being over Tech, versus bowl game 6 or 7 wins, but a loss to Tech. Which way do you fall?
I'm taking the win over Tech.
Oh, easily.
For sure, 100%.
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the only
they
thing
win one game, and if they beat Tech, I'd consider that
a – Yeah.
And I – love the emphasis on that game this year. And here's why. People will say, like, oh, does that mean they haven't been trying to win it before? I'm like, shut up. No, that doesn't mean that. Previously, people were like, they don't treat it like it's a rivalry game. Like, you're right. They need to do that. Like, Tech has come out more hyped and more like, we're going to win this game. We're going to kick your ass. And I think that shows sometimes. And as long as we don't go down there and rotate quarterbacks every other snap, I think that they...
Triggered.
Microaggression.
I'd forgotten that. I used to get so angry on this podcast talking about that.
Like, can we, like, beep, like, blur that, like, beep, like, when I talk about that? But honestly, and this is going to be, people are going to roll their eyes and say that it's just Darns picking whatever. I think it happens this year, and I think it's going to happen on the road.
Blah, blah, blah. No, we're not getting to you picking, beating the Hokies at the end of the season that hasn't started yet.
Yes, I do what I want.
You're allowed to be optimistic, but that's just, it's based on nothing. You don't have any way to.
Based on women's intuition.
Okay. I do.
She's got us there, Pierce. We got nothing on that.
I can't argue with that. I'll say, I know, Paul, you chimed in and you said you liked the focus, so I'll be the dissenter. The beat Tech thing is fine, but it's a little, win the game, you know. Like, I don't care what they write on their message boards. I don't, you know, if the kids get a kick out of breaking a stone with a hammer, awesome, whatever, who cares. But I don't need the, like, it to be in the news, you know what I mean? Like, and I know it's just like off season, you know, anything that comes out, you're gonna report on. We do that and Daily Progress, whoever. But to have that to be like, today's story is we're trying to beat our rival. Well, you know, yeah. like
that's a fake news media, but no, it's kidding. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I do think that, like, it's not something that, I mean, they talked about it at media day. So, I mean, make of that what you will, but when asked about what their goals are and stuff like that, like, yeah, it's on there. And that's what I like. I agree with you. Like, you do set yourself up when there's, like, stories written about it and, like, mm-hmm, beat writers are tweeting about it, how they said, like, every day, you know, like, what we're trying to hammer in is, like, beat Tech. And they're like, mm-hmm, oh, well, it's been 5,000 days since we've had the Commonwealth Cup. I'm like, good for you. Like, you open yourself up to that. Like, I get that.
Yes.
I just think that this is a nice change of pace, maybe. I don't know what to call it, but just, like,
and I, to me,
put
just,
it out there. Like,
it strikes me, like, every 2 years there's a new hashtag or new thing, you know, like,
well, oh, they should have one every year.
The come up, the new stand, you know, it's just another way to brand.
I say, yeah, go for it. That's what you should
like,
do.
Yeah, exactly. Every year you're going out there, you're trying to beat A, your rival, and
yeah,
B, all your games you're trying to win and focus on. So, like, it just, it doesn't strike me as.
It'd be funny if they did pick one that they're like, the one we're not trying to win.
Is 7-5.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the Richmond game, right?
No, Indiana. They're just like, early.
What storylines are you paying closely attention to in these practice reports that come out, or what maybe hasn't been reported on that you're really looking for answers going into the opener?
I know this will come as a shock to everybody, but for me, it's what the starting offensive line is going to look like.
I know.
Oh, and
not just you invested in the line?
A little bit. And not just who the starters are, who's the nine, could it be, is it going to be eight guys, nine guys, 10 that could end up playing significantly over the course of the season, whether that's due to injury or matchups or you know, just sort of fluctuations with a young group. You know, the reports, the weights that these guys are clocking in at now, you look at two guys like Chris Glazer and Ryan Nelson, both who weighed 260, 270 pounds coming out of high school. Both of them are up over 300 now, or are at or over 300. You've got RJ Proctor at an absolutely ridiculous 335 pounds, and he did something like 30 reps of a bench press at 225 in the conditioning test. Like, that is an NFL body. That is an interior lineman in the NFL. But the cross training that they're doing with getting guys like Chris Glazer and like Jay Feeler getting the time at center so that they can have whatever their best five available at that moment is out on the field. It's reassuring to see that there is this sense of, okay, we have enough guys that we can at least have a competent starting five. And I'm not really sure that was the case last year. There were
it's been a while.
Yeah.
And this was, UVA was essentially O-line U for a solid 5-10 years in the mid 2000s to early part of the 2010s. Mm-hmm. And I think having guys getting back to that level, is going to be an important part of what moves the program forward. And so I want to see how that starting five and then the next three or four guys up, what that starts to look like, how they start to gel.
Paul's like fanning himself right now.
Got the papers.
He knows all those weights by heart. He wasn't reading any of it.
They're on his wall.
He likes them in his journal.
I have tattoos down my
forehead. What about you, Callan?
Yeah, I think the thing I want to know more about is quarterback position. So I want to see what Bryce Perkins is going to be doing.
Probably always, throwing the ball. And
yeah, hopefully running maybe a little bit. Mm-hmm. No, I think it's because he brings a different skill set than Kurt Benker, now with the Atlanta Falcons. Third on the depth chart. What up, Kurt? Friend of the program. I think he just brings a different set of skills, obviously. Like, Bryce has been said that he's more mobile, that opens more of the options, if you will, on the offense.
Ew.
If you read a lovely story by our own Emily Karen on streetlawn.com talking about options. That's something that it's always hard when you show like highlights from that sort of stuff from like fall practice, because if he's throwing touchdowns, that means like the defense isn't doing what they're, you know, it's the same thing like when they show basketball highlights, like, ooh, they made all these great baskets, but does that mean Tony Bennett's defense is no good anymore? Whatever.
Right.
So that's the one I have the most, that I'm most interested in to see, like, ooh.
Yeah.
The one that I'm really excited about is about learning more about. I guess maybe that sounds the same thing, but I'm really excited about some of these defenders that maybe were under the radar or have a chance to step up this year, like Jordan Mack. Chris Peace.
Charles Snowden.
Yeah. He's 6'7". You know what I mean? Like, I cannot wait to see what's going on the defense, because there were great players that you lose someone like Micah Kizer, Andrew Brown off the line, but we
maybe
have
we
some guys.
Improve in pass coverage at the inside linebacker position. I don't know.
I do think that there are going to be.
One could say pass coverage at the safety position might also.
Spicy take Pierce.
These are not new thoughts.
And it is. I mean, I'm curious to see how the defense looks, and it's. They do a good job, I think, and they being the coaches and the Twitters of getting excited. Honestly, like I'm kind of amped right now. Like, everyone, there was one thing I saw that predicted Virginia to go 0-8 in conference. I'm like, but haven't you seen the highlights?
Anything
like,
is possible. Yeah.
I don't understand that. And I don't think that's going to, I don't think that's going to be the case at all, but maybe I don't know. I'm excited. I think that the defense can do some stuff.
By all accounts, Perkins seems to, have a lot going for him. Assuming he stays healthy, and I'm sure we'll all be holding our breath every time he gets hit because of that. But I mean, there are big question marks still. You can't deny, despite my snark, that losing Kizer, Brown, and Blanding.
Yeah.
Would normally be a big deal for any team not named Alabama or Clemson at this point.
For sure.
However, the depth really does give you reason for optimism on the defense in everybody who isn't on the line. The depth at linebacker is better. The depth at defensive back is better. There's talent we've seen in both of those units to have reasons to believe that they'll be better without, those star All-Americans. The defensive line, though, is a huge question mark. And some of that is being answered, hopefully, by some incoming transfers, Pete from Michigan State, and hopefully the guy with massive arms from Ohio State who isn't here yet. His name escapes me.
Big old Dylan Thompson.
Thompson. Yeah, I was confusing him with Applefield on the other side of the line. But
I think one of the freshmen that could have the biggest impact on the team this year is Jordan Redmond.
He's huge.
Enormous. When they posted the picture of the first year's reporting together, I went, damn, Redmond's flexing. Like, Redmond looks like, did they Photoshop him? Is he like in some sort of weird vortex? And no, he's 6'1", 320 pounds, which is exactly how you would build a nose tackle if you were like creating a player in Madden. I mean, if he's still got the step that he displayed as being a fairly high three-star recruit coming out of high school, if it's good weight, if it's playable weight, that's a guy that can come in and take 20, 30 snaps.
Yeah.
And he won't be a three-down defensive lineman, but he can play a series and give a guy a break. He can come in on the goal line packages and be really stout and anchor. So I think he's got a chance to be somebody that really, he may not make a whole bunch of headlines, but I think he may affect the game as much as any freshman who plays this year. Obviously the other new faces will impact the game more, if only because one of them is the quarterback.
Absolutely. And I think on the offensive side, they've got the same depth, an increase in depth that we were talking about with at least the linebackers and the defensive backs. Like you said, with the O-line, having a rotation of actual usable guys that you could bring in off the second string. You're looking at depth at running back, depth at receiver, despite losing, your Lavroni, Dowling. Donnie Dowling, I always had a soft spot for, I think.
I do.
I mean, you've got Oz, who, is going to get as many touches as possible. It's year three of the Pierce says Jordan Ellis should get more touches campaign. Which, to be fair, they did, they gave him the ball plenty last year, for sure. There's a lot of reasons for optimism, and a lot of that is just going to come naturally in this year of rebuilding a program, with your guys. So hopefully we get to see some, vested growth in this roster, and I think that would be huge, even if it were a 5-7 season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like a step back. Even if it's a 5-7 season, another loss to Tech, if it looks like the roster is really, you know, performing at the level and they lose a couple close games, you know, that they then I would still be happy. But hopefully they make a bowl. And, you know, look at, like you were saying, with the middle of the schedule being the hardest, Ohio is no gimme. Indiana is no gimme. But if of those two games, if they could win one or surprise Louisville at home or you know, maybe State or Miami. Anyway, if they can go 2-4 instead of 1-5, or, you know, best case, we'll call it 3-3. They're probably in good shape to get to 6 wins. If they've got
3 wins coming out of that first 6, they could get to like 8. Like I think there's a, if you've got 3 wins out of those first 6 games, including a road win at some at Indiana, say,
yeah,
the confidence level, the trust in this is working, we are good enough to do this.
Yeah,
it could push them up over that sort of 7 wins that is kind of widely thought of as the ceiling of how good this team possibly could be. If they're good enough to get 3 wins out of their first 6, they could be enough to get to 8.
I think it would be
a stretch. But
if those 3 wins are Richmond at Indiana and hosting Ohio, I mean, right. I don't think we're going to be favored in that Indiana game, but I don't think it's – you know, they beat the crap out of Boise State last year on the road. Right. Why can't they do that in Indiana? And as we saw, the team that beat the crap out of Boise State didn't win too many ACC games after that.
That was the fault of the bye week. Duh. No, I'm just kidding. I would say, like, I do think the bye weeks the last 2 years have been a very just unlucky times. I don't know how much a bye week actually affects. I've never been on a football team. Surprisingly, I know. Weird. But I just think, like, the way the momentum was going last season, you come off that huge win, and then you just got to wait. You know, you just got to, like, sit out a week. You got to try and work. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much it actually affects it, but I like that there's – to me, it feels better. I mean, at least, unfortunately, yeah, it's not before the Georgia Tech game, you know.
Yeah. Well, anyway, my point being, if they win at Indiana, I don't think it is necessarily indicative of them being able to get to, you know, above that baseline mediocrity. Because if they win at Indiana and Ohio, and we assume Richmond, and do go 3-3, that means they went 0-3 to start the ACC against games that they will be statistically, you know, not supposed to win, and they won't be favored. But still, then you're looking at, like, well, we're 0-3 of the conference. We took care of business early on. You know, the 3 more wins, including Liberty, are there. But I don't know that I'm feeling good that they're going to get 4. Call it 3. If we get the Liberty win, call it 3 out of Duke, UNC, Pitt, Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech. That's still going 3-2 against the Coastal, who the whole Coastal's pretty bad.
it's Miami and everybody.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. That seems like a big ask. But talk to me if they start 3-0, and then I'll be like, we're going to win everything except the gaming in Blacksburg, because I'm never going to call that a W until I see it happen. But we'll get to game-by-game predictions closer maybe to the start of the season, and certainly throughout.
So like next week.
Do you guys have any bold predictions for, you know, positive or negative things that you think are going to surprise some people in the upcoming football season? You got one, Paul?
The biggest hit of the season will be delivered by Lester Coleman. The punter.
That is a bold prediction.
He put on 20 pounds in the offseason. He is a 6'5", 245-pound punter. And if punters are hitting people, they are doing it at the open field. He is going to – he is either going to carry it on a fake and just obliterate some 180-pound, you know, nickel – corner trying to play it, make a special teams tackle, or somebody's going to pop loose on a return, and he's going to be the only one between them in the end zone, and he is going to de-cleat them. I am feeling the Lester Coleman pain train. It is coming. That's my prediction.
All right, Darns.
I think that Joe Reed is going to have at least 3 returns for touchdown.
All right.
And we're going to have a good kicker.
That's hard to do. Okay.
We're going to make a field goal over 35 yards.
Ooh.
So we're going to have a kicker.
Yeah.
Hey, that is Magia.
Unfortunately, right. Bold. But
that's the boldest thing I could come up with.
I like the optimism. Yeah. My bold prediction is going to be Evan Butts leads the team in receptions at least 3 games. I think they're going to rely on Butts a lot. I know it's going to be hard with Zacchaeus because he gets so many touches. But I like them to use the tight end, despite the fact that they're not recruiting any. I think Butts is going to have a good year as a redshirt senior this year.
Butts should always have a good year. Oh, no. Anyone?
Butts. No, not okay. So much. All right. Whoa. Do you have some rapid-fire questions, Caroline, that you would just want to make up on the spot? Because we don't have a guest this week. We don't have any new people, so I don't know.
Paul, favorite place to get donuts?
Ooh. I am a big – okay, this is all in the caveat that Spud Nuts has closed.
Yeah.
So that's like, you know, rest in power.
So sad.
But I've got to go Sugar Shack.
Yes.
In D.C. We
have one in Charlottesville now.
Excellent.
Shut your mouth. Where
They're
is it?
Fantastic.
It's next to the Pizza Hut with a full bar on West Main Street.
Pierce knows all of the hot spots.
It's across from Hardywood.
Oh.
West Main. Things have changed.
It's Wait, you have donuts, beer, and pizza and a triangle of perfection?
Yeah, it's like a bubble tea place is there too. Oh, and the Sugar Shack makes burgers.
What?
Come on down to Charlottesville, dude, everyone.
The Sugar Shack up here has a speakeasy.
Yeah.
In the basement. It's fantastic. Really?
Does the DC one have it in the basement? The Alexandria one has it like in the side room. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So if any donut places wanted to like sponsor, you know.
Yeah. Sugar Shack.
Friends of the pod.
I'll stop doing this gluten-free thing that I promised my mom for a month.
Oh, yeah. That's so dumb.
That is not a thing you should be doing.
Very cranky.
Yeah.
You know what's really good? Wheat. Mm.
Yeah, pasta, beer, bread.
You know, gluten is actually Latin for taste. So I hope you're enjoying.
Yeah.
Your pro gluten podcast.
I found some chicken tenders that are gluten-free.
Excellent rapid fire food discussions.
Yeah.
Carolyn, do you use blue pens or black pens?
Black pens. What am I, an animal?
This question came up amongst my coworkers today and it was divisive. So
black pens. So here's the thing. In the military, or at least in the Navy, I don't know how the chair.
Hey, if you didn't know, Caroline was in the Navy. If
you can be a fellow man in the Navy. I don't know the words.
So the different colored pens were when you get something like sent up the chain of command to get approved, like different people use different colored pens. So all official paperwork had to be done in black pen. But like, so when things got signed off, like the operations officer was the only one who could use the blue pen and it's the same across like
cool.
So like the XO has
there's nothing pen. Pierce loves more than really strict rules.
Yeah.
And the skipper
about
had the
pens.
Green pen.
Don't use the green pen or Al Qaeda's gonna win.
But all paperwork has to be done in black.
Well, I learned something tonight.
Black pen.
I didn't want to, but I did.
Tune in every week for more super important knowledge like that.
Every week, Caroline's going to disclose military secrets.
I can only hope someone's listening for the first time and they're
all
like,
"All right,
I
think
hell?
We've probably lost all our listeners by this point." So let's close.
We found that one guy who's really like passionate about donuts and, like stationery.
It's like, yes, you should only use black pens.
I think our family members have probably hit
even my dad episode.
So well, stay tuned next week. We'll be back to dig a little more into preseason football and maybe talk about some other UVA sports as well. But until then, thanks guys for joining me. Thank you listeners for listening, and stay tuned. Go Hoos.